Ghost Hunting in New England,
your favorite spooky podcast. And happy Wednesday. Welcome back to Ghost Hunting in New England with your hosts, Amelia.
And Beth.
And we are so excited to be here. Thank you all so much for your feedback this week. We've gotten a lot of really good stuff. We're going to go over a lot of it and answer some questions at the end of the episode. We've had just an awesome time. So many people responded to our ghost hunt in Weymouth, Massachusetts last week that we played. And we've had some awesome conversations about orbs. If you haven't checked out that episode yet, please, after this one, keep going, listen to that one. We have a very special guest today, Beth.
We do. We have Will Fox from the Long Island Paranormal Investigators. Hi, Will.
Hey.
How you guys doing?
Good. Thank you so much for coming on our show. We really appreciate it.
And my pleasure.
If you are with the Long Island Paranormal Investigators, which isn't in New England, and we acknowledge that right off the bat.
However, I just want to point out Amelia and I are in New England, so we are still ghost hunting in New England.
We're ghost talking in New England.
We're ghost talking in New England. I like that.
Will, how would you start off and tell us a little bit about what the Long Island Paranormal Investigators are all about?
All right, so Long Island Paranormal Investigators started in 2003. Just a couple buddies that were hanging out and kind of dared each other to go into an abandoned psych ward near us. The founder who still runs the group today, Michael Cardenuto, he dared two of his friends while they were playing hockey near this place to go into, like I said, abandoned psych ward. It's called Kings Park Psychiatric Center, and it still stands today. And so he dared the two of them to go in there by themselves with a camera and just, you know, look around. It was actually during the day. It wasn't even at night. And so they went in there by themselves, you know, just messing around like kids. And they actually encountered something right off the bat with no paranormal experience at all. They know they were in the building alone. And you can hear on their footage that we still have that there was a giant, it seems like it was a giant metal shelf or something along those lines. You could hear something shift,
wow,
like heavy shift in the building. And we know for sure that they were there by themselves. So they ran out, and that was the start of Long Island Paranormal Investigators.
Well, that is very cool. I like that a lot.
That is. And I've heard a story very similar to that before. And I think that it's such a great story to show people that you don't always have to be a ghost hunter. Like, there is nobody like wakes up one morning and they're like, I'm a ghost hunter. You're just into something spooky, right? And you go and you check it out. And then suddenly the next morning you wake up and you're like, I'm a ghost hunter.
Or exactly. You're not even into something spooky. Something spooky just is into you. And
well, yeah, I guess that could happen too.
That's happened.
Yeah, happened. That's the story of every client.
I have always been spooky. Now, your group is set up a little differently. And I kind of want to talk about that just because, you know, as we were looking and like looking into you guys, you have a large group. And it seems, I mean, everything is kind of set up in different, like, tiers almost, or different categories.
There's like a hierarchy or something of training absolutely. Levels.
Now, right, yeah. That is awesome. So, tell us more about that, because I think a lot of groups could really benefit from that.
So, I'd say most paranormal teams, you know, like low-level paranormal teams, not like stuff that you see on TV or whatever, but most teams are between, I'd say safely, like between 7 and 11 people, at most, really 11. Our team currently, I believe, is close to 15. I don't want to waste your time and try to count off the top of my head. But yeah, we do have a rank structure within our group, which it's based off just military, army rank structure. And we're very strict with the rank structure. So there's obviously a chain of command. And, you know, if you have an issue or you have a question with whatever piece of equipment that you're using, a theory, whatever it may be, you run it up the chain of command to someone that's higher than you. And basically, in order to get promoted, you have to be certified in certain equipment and theories and have a certain number of investigations under your belt. know how to run a group, all that kind of stuff. And it's all very intense. It's almost like going to college, honestly. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work, but it's worth it. It's absolutely worth it.
Now, do you know how you guys kind of got set up with that structure? Because correct me if I'm wrong, but you are a member of the military, right?
I'm a veteran. I was in the
Thank
Marine
you
Corps
so much
for
for your
4 years.
service.
You don't have to do that. Thank you. But yes, obviously the group started long before I joined it. But the founder, Mike Carnuto, and now I'm paraphrasing, but I'm pretty sure after the first few years of the group, being the group, the co-lead investigator at the time really figured out they needed a structure. They can't have 12 chiefs and no Indians. So
yes.
they started, they,
well, you can,
they
but it
just,
won't be very successful.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So they just did a little research and figured out that, military rank structure just makes the most sense. And then they just structured the entire group around that. So as you go up in rank, you learn more and more about each piece of equipment and each theory. And then, as you go up, you learn more and then you get in charge of the other investigators, and you're able to run a group on yourself or run the investigation, whatever it may be.
So can you tell us about the rank that you're at and kind of like how you've gotten to where you're at, just, in case people are like looking into this and they'd be like, well, I might like to join that. So like, what is it? What are some of the things that you do? And, you talked about some equipment that you have to be certified in and different
Right.
theories you need to be knowledgeable in. So can you just kind of walk us through like some of the things that you've gone through already and maybe like what your next steps are to move up from the rank that you're at to the next step?
Sure. So actually, my path is a little abnormal compared to the normal member, mainly because I'm actually moving off of Long Island soon to an undisclosed location.
We are going to get to air this, right? You're not like in trouble with the government or anything.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I can tell you off air. Because as of right now, the founder doesn't really want to branch out and then tell people exactly where it is yet. But Long Island Paranormal Investigators first branch off of Long Island will be opening when I open it up, when I move. So I've been a part of the group for a year and a half. And normally that's not enough time to be able to run the group. But the founder, when I told him I was moving, he offered it to me. He said that I've, I don't mean to toot my own horn, but he said I've
toot
been,
away.
just dedicated with the group. Dedication is really the main thing. Just having the interest and being there and doing the work. So I told him I was moving. It was actually a really sad time for me, but, and then he offered, do you want to open up a new branch? And that's the first time he's ever asked anybody that. So obviously, without a doubt, I want to do that.
Very cool. Congratulations. That's awesome.
That's thanks.
Great. Franchising. The first franchisee. So,
that's exactly right. So normally a member in the group that's been in for a year and a half wouldn't be at the level that I'm at now. I'm a staff sergeant, which is pretty high up. Normally, to put it into perspective, someone that's at my level who's not opening up a branch would probably be about three ranks below where I'm at now. It's just, I'm learning a lot of stuff behind the scenes that the higher investigators deal with on the daily, and just an accelerated learning process, because I will be moving soon, within the next few months.
Okay. And so have you basically worked through the steps below where you're at an accelerated level, or are you just hopping steps as you go?
Oh, no. Every single piece of equipment I get certified in, just as if it would be anybody else. Michael Cardenuto would never have me skip steps. And even if he offered it, I would never do that.
Okay.
Just because I want to. It makes sense. But no, I'm trying. I am doing it at an accelerated rate, mm-hmm. but I'm still learning everything else that anyone else would. I just have to absorb it a lot faster. That's all.
Okay.
Cool.
So what kind of equipment are you certified in?
Well, we use a very wide variety of equipment. And one of the things Mike says is he's fairly confident that there are not very many paranormal teams out there that use as much equipment as we use. It's just a wide spectrum of equipment. We have probably half a dozen at least thermometers. We use barometers, compasses, Geiger counters of all different kinds, detecting gamma radiation, beta radiation, microwave radiation. We use, like I said, thermometers with ambient thermometers. We use surface thermometers. We use barometers to check pressure. We can use compasses to check the Bermuda Triangle theory. There's a whole bunch of stuff, obviously EMF meters, radio frequency meters, ITC, digital audio, all kinds of photography.
Sure is a lot. That is.
And that bag sounds
still,
very heavy.
There's still more that I'm missing. Yeah.
And did you say you were in the Marine Corps?
I was, yes.
Okay. So they taught you, my husband's a Marine too. So they teach you how to run with that big heavy pack. So they got you a good training for your ghost hunting.
Yeah. I'm no stranger to having a whole bunch of equipment.
So of all that equipment, which would you say is the most important one that you have, the one you've got the most evidence with?
100% without a doubt, just a plain digital audio recorder.
Yep, absolutely.
It doesn't even have to be anything expensive. Like my personal one I bought for $30 at Walmart, and it has clear quality. It's easy to just plug it in and get the file right on your computer, and it is just so easy. But I would say, without exaggeration, 95% of our evidence that we get in our group is audio.
Nice. Cool. Yeah, I'd say that's because that's one of the things that people always talk about, like especially like, oh, how much equipment do you have, things like that. Like Beth and I, when we go out, we have a recorder, we have an EMF reader, and we have a camcorder, and that's like it.
That's more than enough. Yeah. More than enough.
You mentioned a ghost hunt you were recently on where something spooky happened and thinks that might be messing around with our stuff over here. So could we get a little more info on that and tell us what happened?
First of all, I want to say that was completely in jest. I don't think that there's
no, a ghost.
I don't want anybody to say that I'm losing my mind or anything. But,
no.
But yeah,
you're
so
in good
there's
company,
a
don't worry.
there's a location that Long Island Paranormal Investigators is currently we do a public paranormal investigation every month. So every month we go to this location. It's called Rogers Mansion. It's part of the Southampton Historical Society. And we basically sell the mansion will sell tickets. And it's usually about 20 people, and we'll have five people with each investigator, and we just do a paranormal investigation as if we normally would. But the only difference is we have obviously the public with us. So it gives people an insight to true paranormal investigation, not just what you see on TV. And a lot of people realize that it's not as exciting as bricks getting thrown at Zach Bagans.
Right.
But
nothing's as exciting as Zach Bagans.
Okay. How long are his episodes on TV? 30 minutes?
Yeah, 30 minutes, and he seems to get an incredible amount of evidence, which is amazing.
Well, I mean,
in
it must take him 2 months
encounter
of
90 demons and maybe a witch. And
yep.
Oh my gosh, that guy and a lot of
so
cocaine.
At this this mansion, we do the public investigation, and then everybody leaves after, I believe it's like 11 o'clock or something like that. And then us as a team, obviously we're dedicated to the field just in general. Also, we take the advantage of just doing the investigation ourselves after everyone leaves. So one of the places that we can't bring guests is in the basement of that location. Now, there's never been any claims in the basement before. The only reason that we were initially called to this location was because there were a few shadow people sightings in the main hallway on the main floor.
Oh, cool.
But other than that, there was really not a lot going on in there. So the first time that I went in the basement, I didn't expect a lot. A lot of people hype up basements because they're dark and nobody goes down there. But 99% of the time, there's nothing down there. So I was down in there with another investigator from LIPI, Tom. And we were on opposite corners of the basement, obviously lights off and everything. He had a digital audio. My dumbass forgot to turn mine on. So we were in opposite corners. We were in opposite corners and, you know, we were asking some standard EVP questions, you know, give us a sign that you're here, blah, blah, blah. And he asked the famous question, now infamous question. If you don't want us here, can you, I believe he said, can you make a noise? 7 seconds pass. And then on his audio, you can hear a loud pop and glass shattering. Along with him screaming expletives left and right. But what actually happened was, like I said, he was on the opposite corner of the basement from me, and about 5 to 10 feet in front of me, a light bulb hit the floor and smashed, popped. We investigated it later on and didn't really know where the light bulb came from. We brought the curator from the museum down there and he said, look, I don't even know. There's not even light bulbs like this down here.
Wow.
So we debunked it from having it just fall off one of the shelves that were next to it. Because if it had just rolled off the shelf, it would have fell straight down. But this was in the middle of a pathway. It would have had to fly out about 3 feet off the shelf to hit and crash where it landed. So at the time, the only piece of equipment that I had on me was a plain old digital camera, point and shoot camera.
Yep.
So I turned the flash on very shortly after the light bulb smashed. I took two photos and I have this photo and I'll send it to you guys so you can share it with the fans. But I took two photos and one looks normal. And then the second one, there's a black mass on the right side that we tried so hard to debunk. We tried to put, you know, a finger in front of the lens. We tried to put someone behind the camera. We tried to put something in front of the camera to create the shadow. We could not do it. And we spent hours trying to recreate it in all the perfect conditions. So we're pretty confident that we captured an apparition.
Wow.
There's not really a noticeable form to it, but there's definitely just a large black mass right where the light bulb just shattered. So it was pretty significant. That's the most astounding thing that's ever happened in my paranormal career for sure.
And you're
that
sure
doesn't
you,
happen.
And you're sure you left it there when you left.
Yeah, I'm very sure because we've actually gone back since, and you know I'm drawn to the basement now. I want to know what is down there, and over multiple other investigations, I've brought sensitives and psychics down there with us from our group, and while I try to antagonize whatever is there, which I don't usually do, but for whatever reason, I feel like I needed to. One investigator is actually channeling whatever is down there. And we narrowed it down to whatever being down there because it's attached to a rifle that's down there. There's an old musket that we found on one of the shelves that as soon as I went over and I started to touch it and mess with it, sensitive started to get really agitated. And he said, like, all I see is like, it's almost like buzzing in my head. It's everything's going crazy. So whatever was down there really didn't like that I was touching his rifle. So that's how I kind of know nothing's following me back because whatever is down there is tied to that rifle.
Okay. Well, that's at least reassuring.
You're
leaving whatever it is there. When Amelia and I went out to the powder house, it was almost kind of like a joke that I had done it at the end that I had said, you know, like, and whatever spirit is here and trying to communicate with us, like, we're going to leave you here. but that I have to say, that's one of the things that that kind of scares me about doing this ghost hunting. I don't want something to attach to me and start following me around.
Right. Well, actually, you know, you said it jokingly, but that's exactly what, you know, we say in our group.
Yep.
Like every time. Every time we leave an investigation, you know, no matter where, it could be a client's house that they don't really have any claims and nothing happened. We will always say, you know, whatever's here must stay here. You're not welcome to follow me home. I'll come back and see you if you want to see me again. Just something as open-ended as that. You never know what that could help. It's not hurting.
Just letting it know there is no invitation for it to come with me.
no matter how
interesting it might find me.
It can't hurt. It can't hurt.
You had said as you were talking that you said you brought a medium, and then you corrected yourself to say you're sensitive and you're psychic. You'll forgive my ignorance. Is there a connotation behind medium? What I'm just curious why you made that correction.
So a medium is someone who can connect directly to the deceased and to spirits. So they're the people who can have a full-on conversation with someone who's passed away. A clairvoyant is someone who can feel spirits and kind of like feel what's going on, feel the energy of a place. And then you have empaths who can also feel the energy, but they feel more human to human energy.
Okay. So he said sensitives and psychics.
So a psychic is someone who can predict the future and can usually see the past as well as what's going on in the present of a situation. And a sensitive is someone who is just sensitive to all the energy around. So like, you know, when we do a ghost hunt and I go somewhere and I get really, really like woozy and weird,
mm-hmm.
That's being sensitive.
You're very sensitive.
I'm so sensitive.
You're a delicate flower.
I'm so delicate. Okay, so... Sorry, continue.
No, I was going to say just out of that group, I'd say that sensitives are most common. It's just because like sensitives can simply just be someone who walks into an area and feels like, whoa, I feel like I just walked into a wall, or you know, you walk into a room and you're like, I really don't feel like I'm welcome in this room, or for whatever reason. And a lot of sensitives might not even know that they're sensitive. They just get those feelings throughout the day and don't even think twice about them. So that we do have a few sensitives in our group, and we also have a few psychics. I don't know if our psychics can quite see into the future. if they can, they haven't told me the lotto numbers, and I'm kind of upset. but our psychics are pretty good at basically how we use our psychics in our investigations. When we get to a location, we tell them nothing about the history or even really the name of it usually. As we get there, we start setting up our tech equipment and doing walkthroughs and stuff. Our psychics will do a psychic walkthrough. So basically they're on their own program, walking around with a notebook and just picking up on whatever energy is in there, picking up on names, even faces, seeing stuff, hearing stuff. And just writing everything down that they pick up. And a lot of the time, surprisingly, what they pick up on is very, very, very accurate to the history of the location. Or a lot of the times it'll coincide with audio evidence that we get. If we get an EVP of a name, they might have already written down that name before we even did the investigation, which is pretty substantial. So I have... Prior to becoming a paranormal investigator, I was very, very skeptical of basically everything that we just said. And now that I'm seeing it in person, there's really no way to deny that this stuff is real.
Nice. Very cool.
I feel like this is the second person that we've interviewed who has, one, talked about broken light bulbs, and two, talked about, I didn't believe at first until suddenly I saw things that made me believe.
Well, I think you could say that's how most people are. I mean, seeing is believing, right?
Exactly.
Well, I suppose so, but like, I have never been a disbeliever.
There's a healthy part of being a disbeliever as well. I'm incredibly skeptical of everything. So, and our entire group is really. So we will try to debunk our own evidence mm-hmm. more than anyone else in the world. Not comparing ourselves to other group. I'm saying, anyone looking at our evidence would critique our evidence. I'm saying we would critique it a little bit harder. Just because the founder always says, any evidence that we claim may be paranormal, we want to be able to take it to court and prove that it is not explainable. And that's the goal, really. So 99% of the time, the stuff that we get is, even if it could be explainable, we'll write it off. If it sounds like a man speaking, and it was a group full of girls, but there was a group with a man a little bit further down the path or whatever it may be, we might write that off because it could just be that man's voice carrying into this group. We're very, very critical on that stuff.
As you should be.
Exactly.
Okay. What would you say the percentage? So you guys go out, you do a lot of hunts. I think more than a lot of groups do. And what percent of them would you say you find evidence on?
So actual, like, hard evidence, I'd say it's less than half.
Yeah.
It has been pretty significantly high recently in these two investigations. The one, like I mentioned before, Rogers Mansion. And then there's another location tied in with the Southampton Historical Society called the Halsey House. It's the oldest house on Long Island. I believe it was built in the late 1600s. But we just recently, within the past 2 months, have had an abnormal amount of evidence at that location. We actually just had our group meeting yesterday, and we played the EVPs that we got from one investigation at that location. And I believe we got probably close to 10 EVPs in one night of investigating, which is really incredible.
That is incredible.
Yeah, it really is. It's absurd. Wow.
That is very amazing. Do you know who was coming through on those?
That we're trying to figure out still. We're getting both male and female voices. One of the EVPs that we got is the co-lead investigator, Dimitri. It actually came through on the Ovilus ITC. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Ovilus, how it spits out words, that spirits can manipulate it and pull words from the data bank in the device, and it'll just say a word electronically.
Yes.
So we were using that, and our group is very skeptical of that piece of equipment specifically. We're not super sure if it's real or not yet, but while we were investigating, it spit out two of Dimitri's kids' names, like one after another.
And are they like normal names or?
They're not. I'm not going to say his kids' names
on podcast, yeah, that's fair.
But no, they're not. They're really not. It's not like Tom and Joe. He's Greek. He's very heavily Greek. So they're Greek heavy names, and they're not a common name by any means.
That is wild. For me personally, when I've gone out and used that type of equipment, I've gotten nothing. So that you guys got something with that is mind blowing to me and awesome and crazy.
We were pretty psyched.
Do you have to kind of tell the spirit there how to use it?
Sometimes whatever is there just seems to already know how to use it. But then there's times where, let's say, for example, we use these very small devices, a little tiny black boxes. They're probably about half the size of a deck of cards. And all it is just a little blue light on top, and it has an antenna sticking up. They're called static pods.
Okay.
They just detect static electricity. So, for example, if you walked past it, your pants rubbing together, that could give off enough static electricity to make that light up. That's all it does. It just lights up blue when it detects static electricity. So one of the basic things that we might do is, if we have those set up down a hallway, we'll say, whoever's here with us, if you're here with us, can you just let us know by walking down this hallway and lighting up those blue lights? And if one of them or all of them go off, that would be amazing. But if one of them goes off, you obviously investigate it further, but that might be something. But stuff like that where, I have this K2 meter in my hand. If you come near it, it might light up. Can you do that for me? That kind of stuff.
Okay.
So before we wrap this up, what would you say your absolute favorite paranormal experience you personally have had has been?
Oof, that's a heavy question.
I know. Why we ask it.
I feel like I'd be remiss to downplay exactly how astounding that experience was at Rogers Mansion. Because that's just that kind of stuff happens on TV shows where they fake it and stuff like that. It was amazing that truly happened to us. So I, like I said, I can't not say that that's my most significant, but I've also had other experiences. We do Gettysburg and Lake George Battlefield, and I've had experiences there where I've been physically touched by spirits, and those were pretty moving for me, because both times someone else saw something that was actually touching me at the same time, so
What?
I was validated at the same time.
So who was this, like
Yeah, we might need to hear more about
a
that.
medium who saw it, or
Now, that it was, I actually, ironically enough, it was so the one at Lake George, specifically, there's the Lake George Battlegrounds is almost like a state park now. And there's this one area that just has almost like a pavilion, like a covered pavilion that has picnic tables like any other state park would have. Nothing historically significant to it at all. But for some reason, every time we go in that little pavilion and sit down, we get evidence. This happened to be the first time I was ever at Lake George, and I sat in the corner on one of the benches with my back to the corner, and the other investigator, Tom, that I was talking about that was in the basement with me, when the light bulb broke, he was sitting at the table across from me, and facing me, I was facing him, and another investigator, Dimitri, took a flash photo on the opposite side of the pavilion, and through the flash, Tom saw a 3D figure, so not like a shadow projected on the wall behind me, but a figure that was much closer right behind me. And he said, what, like he got the word what out. And before he could finish his sentence, I felt something grab my shoulder at the same time, which
did you
that
scream?
was when I was, well, I was still pretty new at the time. So I got up and kind of just like took a few steps and looked back, like, what the heck was that?
You didn't scream?
I didn't scream, though.
Okay.
Now, I'm not acting macho. I absolutely could have screamed, but I think it was a little more shocked than scared,
Okay.
because I just
Fair enough.
didn't, I didn't, I truly didn't feel, or I didn't expect anything to be behind me, because it's just a corner. There's no way to get in behind me. Which was it was crazy. That was another situation where we really tried to debunk it as, okay, the flash might have projected my shadow onto the wall behind me, and that might be what he saw. But we did it probably for about an hour trying to debunk it, and we just couldn't do it.
And that still wouldn't explain something coming over and touching you on the shoulder.
Exactly. But that's one thing that we try not to hold too much weight in is personal experiences. That's great if you have a personal experiences, but we're on the lookout for hard evidence.
Yeah, you guys are being scientists.
Exactly. That's where we come at everything with a scientific approach first.
Very cool.
Do you have time for one more question, Will?
Yeah, sure.
So, your dream investigation. Wherever you could go, you want to go and investigate somewhere. Where is it?
Well, when I first started investigating, it was Gettysburg. And actually, now that I've done that, and I've done a little more thinking about where I'd like to go, it would probably be Iwo Jima in Japan.
Really?
Because, oh yeah, I was actually I did a when I was in the Marine Corps, I did a reunion of honor ceremony on Iwo Jima, so I was there for 3 days.
Okay.
That's long story short, that's basically just a ceremony where both sides, whatever veterans are still alive, they come there and do a ceremony, and it's very nice. But I was there for 3 days setting up and tearing down for that ceremony, and that is really where my interest in the paranormal took off. Just being on that island, that's tiny little island in the middle of the ocean at night, just gives you a completely crazy feeling. Like you just feel like there's chaos going on around you at all times, but it's just this tiny little island in the middle of the ocean, and it's calm, it's quiet, but you just feel chaos everywhere.
Wow.
Really?
It was the first time that I truly felt like, all right, what is going on here? And that really made me interested in the paranormal.
Do they call that residual energy?
Yeah, more than likely, yes. More than likely, it's just the events of the invasion of Iwo Jima that are just replaying. You know, that kind of energy can stain the sand and the beach and the mountain that, you know, millions of Marines fought over, and Japanese too. So it's just, yeah, that's just a life-changing event that is likely recorded in the earth for a long time.
Wow, that is incredible. That was like such a great answer now. okay, well, thank you so much. This was great. And do you have anything you want to plug or get in last minute?
Sure. So I mean, we have a Facebook page, Long Island Paranormal Investigators. Find us on Facebook, and we have a YouTube page as well. That we're actually, within the next few months, we're going to be starting a YouTube show. So do about anywhere between 15 minutes to a half hour episodes every week or every month. I'm not sure what our timeline is, but as of right now, we're doing one every day. So if you search Long Island Paranormal Investigators on YouTube, find our page, and we post videos every day.
I'm going to subscribe to that right now. That's awesome.
Awesome.
All right, cool. Well, thank you so much, William. This was amazing, and I'm so happy we were able to connect.
This was fabulous. I'm so glad that just like Amelia, that we managed to make this happen, even with traffic jams and technical difficulties and all of that stuff. But you have been so informative and entertaining and just really good telephone company.
Yes.
It's my pleasure. And I love you guys' podcast, and you guys are doing a great job.
Oh, thank you.
We're having a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah, you can tell.
All right, cool. Well, thank you so much, and have a great night.
You too, guys.
Okay, bye.
So, Beth, what did you think of that interview? I thought it was so awesome.
Oh, that was so entertaining and so informative. He had so much to say.
Yes.
And I feel like we could definitely have Will on again and talk to him probably for an hour or two.
Yes, I would say definitely when he starts his branch, I want to have him back.
Yes. How that's going. That's a great idea.
Yes.
And depending on where his new branch is, maybe we can even go and like travel there and do an investigation.
Maybe.
He seems like somebody who would be knowledgeable, and the fact that he didn't scream when the thing touched him, like,
he's a veteran.
Well, I think that's important. I would have screamed. Okay. Probably run out of there crying. Yeah, I know. I would have made a terrible soldier. We have some feedback that we wanted to really talk about. And we got definitely a question. And Amelia has been plagued by technology troubles lately.
Yes. Amelia doesn't know how to use a computer.
Amelia knows perfectly well how to use a computer. She's
really.
Just having some trouble.
So the issue is that I am addicted to Instagram, and Instagram only allows you to have 5 accounts. And I manage, so I have 2 businesses, a personal account, an account I was doing for an event, and then a foodie whatever account. So the event ended, so I went to delete that one and load up our ghost hunting one. And it won't let me. I'm stuck in for the event I did. So I haven't been able to switch over at all. And so if you're on the Instagram, you're talking to Beth.
And she's lucky you.
And she sends me over everything, but it's always Beth. But we got a message here from Seacoast Mama, and she had to say, Amelia, with you saying that when you're feeling sick, when something is going on during an investigation, you should really look into grounding protection. I'm getting the vibe that you're an empath, or maybe even more than that. I am an empath medium, whatever you want to label it. But as I would also get the same feeling, and ground protection helped me. You both had another great show. Love that you guys are so laid back about it. Ghost emoji, heart emoji.
Yay! Thank you, Seacoast Mama.
So first of all, Seacoast Mama, thank you so much for saying we did a great show, because we love doing it and we love positive feedback. Okay, so when you are talking about me needing to ground myself, yes, I do. every...
You have no idea how much she needs to ground herself.
I have no idea how in freaking outer space I am 100% of the time. And it is brought up to me by pretty much everyone I know in the metaphysical half of the paranormal community. So I am a Reiki master. I'm not practicing right now, which is something we've talked about on the show before. But so I do, when I go into a place, I do, first of all, I pray because I was raised Baptist, so we pray. And then I also do some different type of light work to help protect myself a little. Things I don't do, but I should do, is I haven't been bringing my crystals with me.
I have one in my pocket right now.
You do. And I have some, I usually keep some in my purse. If I have a jacket on, they're in my jacket. Anyone who's been by my store knows we have like a bazillion hidden in all of our corners and things like that. Same in my apartment. But I think that that is really what I need to do. I need to bring like some obsidian, some jet with me, stuff like that. Beth is pointing out her new bracelet that she just got down at Open Doors and Braintree. Plug Open Doors and Braintree Metaphysical Bookstore because they're a great place.
And yoga studio.
And yeah, and if you're ever interested in Reiki or learning more about it, their Braintree location does do free Reiki sessions on Tuesday nights. It's donation-based. The donations go to help homeless people in the area, which is really, really awesome and very, very cool. You want to call in Mondays around 10. So if anyone's interested, that's what you should do. So yes, and I definitely am an empath. That is without question, which is why I'm so kooky around different people or like negative around negative people or weird when I go into haunted space. As for being a medium, that is something that I don't want to do and I don't want to be. And I'm going to leave it at that.
Fair enough. We can all choose what we want to be and what we don't want to be.
We sure can. Right. And when that stuff starts coming in, I'm like, nope, don't want to do it.
Shutting that down.
Blocking it.
Absolutely.
No, thank you.
I also wanted to point out that I was checking out our iTunes reviews.
We got some more reviews. That's more than I even saw earlier today.
Yeah, we have 9 ratings from 9 different people.
Oh my gosh. God bless you guys. Thank you.
Right, which is so great. There are a couple on here. We have one that just came through yesterday. Steve from Arlington says, "These ladies have turned me onto podcasts. They have a great rapport. The episodes are short and entertaining. Can't wait to hear more." Thank you, Steve from Arlington.
Thank you. I have no idea who that is. That's amazing. Wow. Thanks so much, Steve.
So then we have another one from Mondo Bizarro, and the title is The Unbelievers Podcast Sent Me.
And thank you so much for The Unbelievers Podcast and Russ and Drea and Rob and everyone over there who's been so amazing at plugging us. So thank you. And it got us a 5-star review. So thank you.
Yes, thank you. So Mondo Bizarro says, "By far my favorite new ghost hunting program, real people taking a realistic approach to ghost hunting in one of the most haunted areas in America. Great stuff. Can't wait to hear more." Well, Mondo Bizarro, thanks. We hope to provide more.
Yeah, thank you so much. That when I saw that one the other day, I was so happy. Like, oh man, it just feels so nice. So as always, if you think we deserve a 5-star review, please go on iTunes and give us that 5-star. And if you don't think we deserve 5 stars, please message us privately and tell us what we can do to make your experience even better.
Yes. Don't leave a 1-star review. That's just rude.
So rude. Okay.
Other big news that we have going on.
We have so much.
We were interviewed. So we did the interview with Will today, but we were actually interviewed this week.
We were interviewed. And again, we hooked up with them through the Unbelievers too. So very cool.
We should probably send them like an edible arrangement or something.
I'll look into that because we should do that.
We should.
So we were interviewed this week by Brendan Shea for his podcast, Serial Spirits, which is a awesome podcast. They do some paranormal stuff. They do some true crime stuff. They have really cool music that plays during their podcast too.
They do.
Yeah. It's him and his girlfriend and they're cool and they have great accents and I love listening to them talk. I really do. I've been really getting into their podcast and it was such a delight for Beth and I to go on there. That episode should be airing over the next few weeks. And
I think he said 3 to 4 weeks.
Yeah. And they're getting ready to launch on a big paranormal network. So way to go, Brendan Shea. That's amazing. Yay! Congratulations.
And thanks for having us on.
Yes. And thank you for letting us do our first interview. It was very cool. It was a lot of fun. We were very nervous. We were a little awkward.
And if it seems like I'm not talking in that interview, it's because he edited me out. It's not because I didn't say anything. It was all awkward.
It was fine. And okay. Everything gets better with practice. So if you want us to come on and do an interview for your podcast, we sure as heck will. Okay.
And we promise to be.
We promise nothing.
Yeah, no.
We promise absolutely nothing. Okay. So.
We promise not to use the F word.
I can't promise that.
I promise not to use the F word.
I can promise to use it minimally.
Amelia pulled her tarot cards and they said that one of us might leave the podcast.
No. Sometimes they're wrong. They were right about your cat, but they've been wrong about other things.
Her tarot cards completely knew where my cat was when he was missing. Some helpful person in my neighborhood picked him up and brought him to a shelter like four towns away.
And not to brag, but not only did I know kind of where he was, but I knew the dates in which he would come back.
She did. That was really weird. Yeah. And she doesn't usually do dates.
I don't usually do dates, but I...
However, if you would like to take Amelia out for dinner, she would love that kind of date.
I don't know about that. I think Amelia's done with dating for a long time. I don't think that's in the cards. Not sure that was in the cards.
Like, we're getting goofy on a Friday night. It's been a long week.
Okay, so next, we also have some cool stuff coming up. So next week, we have a guest host coming into the studio named Walter, and he is going to go over some EVP stuff with us. He has a really interesting one. Him and I have been friends for a little while now, and this is one that I carry on my phone and I show everyone because I am so intrigued by it. A lot of people have a lot of different opinions on what it says. If it says anything, if it says something like very serious, it's just a cool story. So he's going to come and tell us about that. And then we're going to go over some other EVPs I have. We're going to look up some kind of famous ones and just talk about all that stuff. So that's coming out next week. And then from there, we've also had some cool people send us messages. So we have a lead in Beverly for a haunted mansion that has been turned into apartments.
Bum, bum, bum.
Yes. And we are stoked to try to go over there. And we're going to try to make that happen ASAP because I really want to go. All right. So very cool. So thank you all so, so much. Do we have anything else, Beth?
We do. I think we've settled on a name for it. We're going to do a part called Drive-By Ghosting. So if you have a scary story that you would like to share with us, if you have a story from your hometown that you would like to share with us, if your grandma told you a scary story once upon a time about a time when she was little or a place that she went to, we want to hear it. If you want to call in, we would love to have you call in. If you want to send it to us in a recording, we can work with that. But we would be thrilled to have you come and talk with us and be part of the show about your spooky experiences.
Yes. Yes. So we'll figure out a way for people to call in. We will love to get it via email or through an Instagram message or Facebook message. And yeah.
Yeah. So speaking of those, you can find us on our website, ghosthuntinginnewengland.com. We are on Instagram at ghosthuntinginnewengland. We are on Facebook, ghosthuntinginnewengland. We are on Twitter, ghosthuntingne.
Are we doing anything with our Twitter?
I'm hoping that all the stuff that I put on Instagram copies over to Twitter.
Okay.
We're on YouTube. You can find us on YouTube. You can get our podcast on all of your favorite podcasting apps. I'm not going to list them all, but we're on all of them, I think.
I'll list them. You can get us on iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher, Spotify, SoundCloud, still YouTube. And we're trying to get on Pandora. So keep subscribing. Keep giving us likes. Keep doing all that so Pandora pays attention to my many requests to get on there.
And have we looked at Google Play yet?
We're going to look at Google Play.
Right. Coming soon to Pandora and Google Play.
And I don't know if you heard it at the beginning of this episode, but we finally have our new music, which is so exciting. Thank you so much to Aaron Skilb, who came up with this amazing track for us. And we absolutely love it. So thank you, thank you, thank you. You can visit him online at aaronshilb.com.
He's on Instagram too. So you can find him on Instagram, the Aaron Shilb, and I'm sure he would love to have you following him and making connections with him that way.
Yeah, and listen to all of his music and his band, the Dirt Road Degenerates, and everything else. Thank you, Aaron. Hey, Aaron, that was totally cool of you. So thank you all so much for listening this week, and we look forward to seeing you next week with EVP Talk with Walter.
Coming, what's it going to be? May 29th?
I don't remember.
I think, what's today, the 17th?
Yeah, May 29th.
I feel like we're always confused at the end of our podcast.
I'm confused all day, every
all day. Right. Stay confused, people. All right. Stay confused.
See you all next week. Thank you.
Bye.